feel good. Scared.
It's a scary time, Kate. It's a scary time.
And I can't get one day more, another day, another destiny out of my head.
That is a tough one. That's a tough one. Which
these
now...
men who seem to know my crime will surely come a second time. Sorry.
Should I leave while you finish this? We need to go and you just do the whole second act and then...
And then we can begin.
Then we can begin. I guess that's the end of the first act, isn't it?
I don't know. I screwed up because there's the one at the end and then there's just the one
at
the beginning.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I conflated the two.
Oh, yeah. That's easy to do.
I'm making lots of mistakes.
Lots of
so
conflations.
Speaking of mistakes.
Yes.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
Being made. And I say that without judgment. I say that with bemused admiration for the makers of mistakes. What? Do you remember the interview from Beaches, the movie Beaches? And Bette Midler has the most awkward interview of her life. And she says, CeCe Bloom feels things deeply.
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure you remembered it. That's all.
That's all. Dude, there's that Margaret Cho bit where she's like in somewhere in the UK, I think. And she comes across a bar called CeCe Bloom's Bar and Grill.
Oh, God.
She's like, that is the gayest bar that has ever existed.
Yeah,
and then I think she says that line.
CeCe Bloom feels things deeply. So Ryan, people can get touched up, can get massaged by you now.
Oh yeah. So what do you mean?
I'm sitting on a website. So if you're in the Boston area, go to ryanyoga.com/bodywork and book yourself a session. You have to call. I have found this out the hard way, but you have to call the massage school. The number's on here, and request Ryan. But this is wonderful. It's wonderful news for the general public.
Thanks for that plug.
You're
welcome. How much do I owe you?
No, but it is good news.
Yeah, no, it is good news. It's good to get started. It's hard to conceive of the sheer number of hours that one needs to put in to finish one's license. But, you know, I'm making it through. Though, like, 20 plus hours a week extra on top of teaching and running the studio is no small feat.
No, it's really not.
And yet I was up at like 3 a.m. wide awake this morning, like ready to go.
Tell me about the coffee consumption that made that possible.
There was very little coffee consumption yesterday too. It's very confusing.
What?
I know. It's very, very confusing. I'm sure that someone knows something about a moon or a
retrograde or yeah,
something in someone's house and
something in someone's house,
something rising in someone's house. I don't know. That could explain all of the things, but I do not know of such things. So, yeah. So I don't know. It was just a strange experience. Yeah, it is. One thing that's really fascinating is the sheer supremacy in the massage world of one Tom Myers and his often remarked on anatomy trains, which are not by any means like wrong or bad or I don't know. It's interesting stuff, I suppose. But like, everything is like, everyone's like still very excited about it. And I'm just like, yeah, I feel like there are other points of view that are worth observing, especially since like, it's not a map that I can necessarily track with. I have other maps that I track with better. And maybe one day I will be interested in that. But I feel like we could learn the material without having it to be like so married to that that point of view. I don't know.
I just I get stuck on the title, Anatomy Trains.
Oh yeah?
It feels like an incomplete thought. Or sure. Is it supposed to be trains like locomotive?
Oh. This is a very good question.
Oh, you're thinking. Yeah, like trains of thought, anatomy trains of thought, or anatomy trains, like it's short and cutesy.
It's
which is kitschy and cute for training, anatomy training. Trains, hashtag.
God. So yeah, I don't know. It's plugging along, and hopefully I'll make it through without a complete and total burnout. But I have to say the burnout doesn't come from actually doing the work. The burnout comes just from the fact that it's like late night classes, like studying physiology until 11 o'clock at night, two nights out of the week is not not high on my priority list.
No, but I bet, I mean, this has got to be good for your brain, you know, waking up that quadrant again. Not that it was ever dormant. But
yeah, I was going to say. Not sure how dormant it was, but you know, it's interesting to like the way that one studies anatomy from the perspective of having a human being on a massage table as being the primary modality of work versus being on a yoga mat. You know, it's interesting to parse out the differences there. And to put that into context with what I already have learned from other sources in regards to anatomy and but it is also interesting. There is like a very, very wide variety of experience levels in the room with this material. So it's interesting. I just sort of like sit back and like take it all in and try to be quiet. Don't ask questions.
So I'm like, if you work at Massage Envy, I for many am somebody's worst nightmare because I'm like, oh, what muscle is that? Oh, what do you think that is? And I get the sense that most people, most therapists that are working with me are like, is she testing me? And the answer is no, I'm not. I just like I think massage therapists are the shit. They're the best. The stuff they have to memorize and the work they do. But I always love it. I think getting a massage therapist's opinion or take on things happening in your body is so valuable. I'm always asking questions and it feels like maybe it's outside the scope of practice, but I want to hear their perspective.
Yeah. Well, their perspective, I mean, that certainly falls within the scope of practice. Of course, there are like diagnostic things that are not going to be within the scope of practice, but like their experience of feeling your body is certainly within their scope, as it were. And speaking of scope of practice, Yoga Alliance.
Oh,
I know. I brought it up, and now I'm regretting bringing it up. No, we have to talk about it.
Wait, absolutely.
That was I don't know the adjective to describe the emotional roller coaster that I experienced reading the comments on Jay's blog.
I know.
This is very complex.
Jay, you touched a couple nerves there.
We'll put it in the show notes if you want to pause right now and read.
Yeah, go read the blog. Go read the blog and then read the comments. The comments are rich.
They are indeed.
And angry.
Yeah. Obviously it's difficult to read folks' tone in text sometimes, but maybe like stepping out away from those specific comments, I think it's becoming clear that or rather it's probably always been clear, and some of us were just hoping that some magical human would swoop into the organization and make everything better. That's just not going to happen. And I think, which honestly is something that I repeated time and time again when I was part of that working group, is our jobs as yoga teachers is to teach what we feel is valuable. And that no matter what the Yoga Alliance says, we still have to teach what we feel is valuable. And I'm going to be very curious to like see what comes of that standards review. But either way, I just let my, because I've been thinking about this a lot, not necessarily Yoga Alliance particularly, but the structure that Yoga Alliance has set up, not even having to do with the registry, actually, just having to do with the stratification of trainings. It's like it's antithetical to how one might study pretty much in any other field. So what I mean by that is, well, let me back up. So that is by means of saying that, you know, over the past month when I've kept getting these reminder emails about you have to re-up your registration for yourself, you have to re-up your registration for your quote-unquote school, I've been like, okay, and just sort of letting them fly by. And then I finally was just like, when I got the final one being like, you have to do it today, and then the subsequent ones today being like, just kidding, like, you can still do it if you want to. I'm not renewing either. Which is not, I don't say that with some sort of like, I'm ahead of the curve by any means. To me, it was important to keep it because when certain folks had registered for trainings with me, they did it, you know, part of that agreement was that it was Yoga Alliance, registered. You know, now that I have a training winding down and I'm going to sort of tweak it for its next iteration, I'm not interested in following that standard. I'm interested in following my own standard. And the truth of the matter is I don't have whatever, like, 200 and some odd bucks it would have cost me to re-up. Like, I just don't have that money lying around. And when I really thought about, like, why am I fucking paying that? Like, it's not like Mind Body, which cost me like something like $2,700 a year. But they've got everyone kind of like by the balls, like in terms of running a yoga studio. Like, in theory, Yoga Alliance doesn't really have that grip. They pretend to have that grip, but they don't actually have it. I've been at this for a little over a decade now. I don't need someone to like justify what I think is valuable to teach to folks. Because like most of the teachers that I study from aren't Yoga Alliance registered. Like, they could give a flying fuck about that. And so it's just like, you know what? Let's just cut the cord. Yeah, that's what I have to say about that. Did I miss something in there? I feel like I started saying something and didn't finish.
Well, here's a question. When did you feel that way? And how does it relate with the fact that you were one of the, as described by many, the prominent voices in the yoga community that was asked to be on a panel? How did that inform your feelings towards things?
I thought the folks that were present in the panel were really like genuine humans. There were a lot of things that were brought up, some of which I agreed with and some of which I didn't agree with. Yeah, so I thought, that was a fine process. I sort of questioned how they split up the groups and how they were going to, and still how they're going to sort of put that information out in public, and what final decisions they're going to choose to make. But I realized that the thing that was kind of rubbing me the wrong way from the beginning, is there this like stratification of trainings by hours is not how I study and not how I want to advocate for other folks to study. So in other words, you did a 200-hour training at Back Bay Yoga.
I think so.
Yes. I know so. I was in the room.
Okay, I was.
Now, the general attitude out there is once you've done a 200-hour training, like, you don't want to put yourself in the room necessarily in another 200-hour training once you're already out there teaching. But if you were to go to a 300-hour training with a different teacher, like a quote-unquote advanced training to get you to that 500, you're still probably going to need to get up to speed with the context in which that teacher or that school or that lineage, if we even want to use that word, how they understand yoga. Like, the context will still have to be reset. And I would much rather have a situation where, you know, okay, so you did your initial training. Let's like take the hours component out of it, which really just teaches you how to, you know, teach breathing and moving classes to a group, you know, end of story. And then, you know, that is different from going and quote unquote studying yoga with a teacher. It might happen within the context of the same program, but it doesn't necessarily need to. And then if you decide that you want to go learn from someone else, then you go do another training with someone else. And then you go do another training with someone else. And then you do another training with someone else. It's like so many other professions have some form of initial training, which I still don't think should be set by Yoga Alliance, but, you know, could totally be set by various sort of regional or organizations, or multiple national organizations, depending on what standard you want to your curriculum more aligns with. So you have that initial training, and then people are just going and learning from the folks that they're influenced by. And it's just understood, not enforced, but understood that, like, there's way more study to do. Because I don't see people, I feel like it cuts off this opportunity to learn more because everything has to be within the context of a training or quote unquote continuing education.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we just need a whole different context. And so as much as I would love to say that, like, I just put together a curriculum that I think is valuable, and if it happens to align with Yoga Alliance, then, you know, great, it aligns with Yoga Alliance, or it goes above and beyond Yoga Alliance. That still is not what I want to be advocating for. I want to advocate that people find a teacher that they resonate with, and study with them. And if there's some mechanism by which that teacher feels they can train people to teach a class, then they should train people to teach class. I'm not necessarily like advocating for going all the way back to the days of like the teacher being sick and pointing to you and being like, you're going to teach class today, I'm going to go home. And that was your, like, you know, initiation into teaching. Like, I'm not saying that that's necessarily, that yielded some pretty positive results for folks, but I'm not saying we need to go back to that per se, but we could go back to something much more, relational.
Which would just, you know, cut the industry side of things off at the knees.
Yeah. I don't want to pay however much I was paying per year.
Did you take it off your website?
I don't think it was ever on my website. I have to check.
I think that's what, it's interesting. It's like, everybody that I've spoken to agrees that Yoga Alliance is hog swaddle, but everybody still grips to the label of, look, I jumped through a hoop. Look.
Yeah.
Look, my thing, I'm legitimized by this little pixel accumulation. I'm legitimized by this little circle that you technically just pay for.
You literally just pay for the EPS file, basically.
Yeah, and but people are not jumping to remove it from their websites.
Yeah. I would put an open call out there to anybody in Boston who is leading trainings. We have a long enough yoga history in this town. We could all get together and set our own standard.
You mean in Massachusetts?
Yeah, or even just Boston. And we get together, we set a standard. No one has to pay, you know, anything. If we need a, like, logo to make something seem that, like, whatever. Plenty of other states Like I'm not, I don't really don't want the state involved in licensing yoga teachers. I think that would be awful and disastrous, but like we could just set our own standard as a group of studios. Like if we could orient to what we were all doing in the training, see what the trainings have in common, agree that we're all doing way more than what that lowest common denominator is, but say like, okay, these are what we all agree to, you know, do in the context of our trainings. And I think that would be much more productive. And if it was something that worked, we don't go create a big, like, even state organization out of it. You say to folks in other big yoga markets, like, here's what works for us. See if that works for you. Tweak it. Take our work and do it in a way that makes sense for your community. I think we just... you can't... At this point, there's just... You know, and people have been saying this for years, and I've known this for years. But again, I had this sort of like magical thinking that something was going to like magically shift it. But nothing's going to shift. And if it shifts, it shifts towards regulation. I think everyone just needs to think about what their own standards are and hold firm to those. And then, you know, if there can be an agreement on standards within the context of either a local situation or within, this already happens with the, with, you know, not saying it's a perfect system because it's far from a perfect system, but this happens all the time with style-specific trainings. There's an agreement on what needs to be taught. There's an agreement on the however many rungs of Iyengar training that people need to go through. There's a common assessment that everyone has to go through. The form of everybody's quote-unquote training is different depending on which teacher you learn from, but they're all preparing you for the same assessment. Again, not advocating for that in the broader yoga community. That works because the Iyengar community has a specific standard. Whether you agree with it or not, it has a set of standards. Very specific, like oddly specific standards sometimes. and, you know, that is not a perfect system, but, you know, is just one example of something else. You know, the we don't even really have time to get into the Ashtanga system of doing that because that's a whole other conversation that we can have or not have. I think there just has to be other smaller scale ways of doing this that still have the same result of self-regulation. And self-regulation that's recognized. Like, you can be a rolfer in the state of Massachusetts without having a massage license. The state recognizes what? That's a legitimate form of bodywork that has its own high standard, and you can be a rolfer if you've graduated from the institute in Boulder. Like, those are that they are exempt from, you know, there's a lot of crossover there, I think, in terms of probably people who have both designations, because some people probably, you know, had their massage license and then ended up going to study Rolfing. But it's, at least last time I checked, which was a couple of years ago, it's in there as not being included within the broader licensure of massage. Same with a bunch of other, there's like a bunch of other manual therapies that are listed in that specific law that are considered quote unquote like not massage. So that is a community that has their own standard of practice, and it's a well-established standard of practice with, you know, research done on it and everything, you know, like, so, you know, there are other ways to manage this. But I think the first one is just reflecting on, like, if you're a teacher who feels qualified and called to teach students how to teach yoga, how to share yoga, then we all have to have a conversation about, okay, well, what are our standards? If I really think about it, unless the, like, scope of teaching was super specific, like, I don't really feel all that comfortable stepping into other people's trainings. Unless it's like, Ryan, I would like you to share this, this, and this about restorative yoga. Or I would like to you to share this, this, and this about, you know, these topics. You know, that's clear. I think it just has to get a lot more, I think everyone would benefit if the whole thing was smaller. Not these, like, 40 person colossal trainings. Like, is there a way that we could turn it around so that is no longer the cash cow? But, like, studying and practicing is the cash cow for the studios. I think there's a way to do it. But it requires a complete reestablishing of the context. And I don't know how to do.
It requires a different price structure for classes. I think part of it is, like, in order for classes
beyond price structure. Like, price structure is obviously a part of running the business, but I'm talking about not the context of the business of a studio. I'm talking about the broader context of yoga.
What we're doing?
Yeah. A bigger deconstruction than just a pricing model.
I know, but it always boils down to that. You know, so I think I go there first with interest of, well, then what does it cost to be able to participate in anything, you know?
Yeah, but haven't we already crossed that boundary?
In terms of financial accessibility, yeah. Yoga, once classes, you know, went north of $20 for a drop-in, which is still lower than it is in some areas.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think we've already crossed that threshold.
I don't know. I worry that with smaller means, teachers paid less, and the people who are invited are the people that, you know, can afford to be invited. And I'm not saying that we have inclusivity figured out by any stretch of the imagination. That's just my primary anxiety when I imagine reimagining. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but the bigger it is, the more, like, let's say all of the one room studios in Boston disappeared. So you're only left with multiple studios, with studios with multiple rooms, the independent ones plus the corporate model. Like, you have an inaccessibility of location already, not just financial accessibility, but you got to get there, right? So wouldn't the accessibility be in some ways helped by, you know, a company having a couple of smaller studios that were scattered around the city versus, you know, these bigger and bigger and bigger studios at the city center or at multiple city centers, depending on how you look at it. Which obviously, like, you know, real estate might never support that. And, like, we might be on the point where that's sustainable, but I think there's a way in which small supports the financial stability of the studio and the financial accessibility of the studio, because I can do things like offer, you know, give people a break because the studio is small enough that it's like, okay, yeah, you're here all the time. Like, let me like help you out or figure out a way for you to be on work study. For like, those options go away quickly the bigger a studio gets. And certainly within the context of corporate studios, they just don't even do that. And just think about how much yoga you and I got to do because we were sitting at the front desk or mopping the floors or whatever it was that we did. So I think before the business model is reimagined, I feel like the whole context of what we're doing has to be, I don't know if it's reimagined or like reverse engineered.
Oh.
A little bit. Like, we just need to like step the whole thing back, which doesn't mean that we we get rid of power yoga. It doesn't mean we get rid of, heated yoga. This is not some sort of like stylistic rant I'm going on. It's just that at some point someone has to point the train away from vigorous, sweaty yoga, and towards yoga that actually supports long-term well-being, without denigrating the fact that sweaty, vigorous yoga might be an essential part of someone's path to living well. Because it was for everybody I know, especially the folks who are out there like ranting against it. Sweaty, vigorous yoga was at some point a thing that like really worked for you, and then it didn't. Oh well.
Yeah. Oh well.
Like, you went and learned more things. And sometimes people have to discover things on their own. I don't care how much you yell at them about the position of the knee or the, you know, the science behind this or the science behind that. Like, again, I use this analogy all the time. It's like your best friend telling you about this record that you really have to listen to because you're really going to love it. That is a surefire way for you never to listen to that record until 3 years later you pick up the record and you're like, oh, wow, this is a really great record. And your friend is like, yeah, you idiot. I told you about that years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was worried that my exhaustion was just going to lead to like complete and utter silence today, but it's going in a good direction.
I don't know if it's just because of where my location is and the geography of my own life, but I find myself feeling more fiery and somehow less connected to I don't know. I want to be fair because and have good perspective on this, because I love teaching. I love that I get to teach. I enjoy where I teach. I have a lot of things that I'm very grateful for.
Yeah.
And there is a part of me, a very large part of me, that across the board in several areas is like, just burn it to the ground. Okay. You know, like how we're thinking about teacher trainings and how we're thinking about class attendance and how we're thinking about teachers' careers and trajectories. And I don't know anymore what people are doing in classrooms, even when I'm in them.
Say more about that.
I feel far away. I feel like we're getting collectively farther away from something that we, that make.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
And I don't, I also recognize that organisms have natural lifespans and natural movement patterns. And so if collectively we consciously or otherwise are moving in a direction that we don't like, there is a purpose and utility to it. One that I think will bring us collectively to a larger understanding of what we were doing in the first place. So the fact that more and louder condemnations of sexual assault and assaults on yoga students is coming forward. The fact that that is happening simultaneously as the perception that what's actually happening in the average yoga class is becoming watered down garbage drivel, those two things are not accidentally occurring at the same time. So wouldn't, as a swarm of fish noticing that it's swarming in a direction, I have to hope that it's for the health of the community that these two seemingly bad things are happening, because it will cause a restructuring and a reimagining. It just might also cause a forest fire in the process.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, yeah. We might self-destruct as a community.
Oh, I think self-destruction has already happened. And I think, I think it's in terms of the broader industry. I think in terms of like individual relationships that are formed around the context of yoga. No, I don't think that those are going to self-destruct. I think, you know, they might shift and evolve, but like the people that you feel connected to and who you feel connected to partially because of practice, like that's not going anywhere.
Okay, I'll agree with that. And, you know, and that, you know, you even point in the direction of there's a resurgence of independent bookstores that are doing well.
Yeah.
And independent presses are doing better than they've ever done. You know, like there's exciting things happen through the explosions as the small... I've been thinking about, have you heard of the term shyness of shyness?
No.
So tree canopies communicate collectively with each other. So that if you're in a forest floor and you look up, there is a buffer of space between trees that grow. And they communicate how much space there will be to negotiate who and what gets light.
Yeah.
And, I just have been reflecting a little bit on that idea, but also on the idea of this collective failure and collective triumph that we apply to individuals that is actually something that is happening in unison, which...
Wait, say more about that.
When somebody... So let me find the quote that I'm referencing, because it is sort of the origin of this... thing I've been thinking about.
While you find that quote, have a delicious long pause while I go and turn on the lights, because it's becoming like pitch black in here. So be right back. And we're back. Are you back?
Oh, yeah, I am. I'm doing my damn homework. Okay. So here's the quote. It's from Thomas Merton, No Man Is an Island.
Mm-hmm.
Only when we see ourselves in our true human context, as members of a race which is intended to be one organism and one body, will we begin to understand the positive importance not only of the successes, but of the failures and accidents in our lives. My successes are not my own. The way to them was prepared by others. The fruit of my labors is not my own, for I am preparing the way for the achievements of another. Nor are my failures my own. They may spring from failure of another, but they are also compensated for by another's achievement. Therefore, the meaning of my life is not to be looked for merely in the sum total of my own achievements. It is seen only in the complete integration of my achievements and failures with the achievements and failures of my own generation and society and time.
Yes, ma'am.
Which is problematic and delicious all at once.
Yes, indeed.
And the more I think of it, and then when I think of the shyness of the trees, and I think of the way a school of fish moves together or a swarm of bees, how can we not see the unspoken language that happens collectively as a community making mistakes and triumphing and learning together?
I would just question how much togetherness in the sense of that quote, sure, but not really togetherness in the sense of community.
Oh, no, 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 no. This is a togetherness that happens involuntarily.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yes, precisely.
I'm referring to like the deeply visceral animal togetherness that happens just because you were fucking born.
Yes.
That's the collective animus I'm sort of referring to. I don't know. And then I think, is it okay to eat 14 ounces of cauliflower rice a night? You thought I was going to say something smart.
Yes.
No, but I got to tell you, this line of thinking for me is a way to feel less acutely about, and I don't know that that's a good thing, but it's a way for me to feel less anger about the speed at which things happen or the speed at which others process information. You know, I feel like a softness about and a connectedness.
Yeah.
When I read those types of sentiments, I don't know that it helps me with forgiveness.
Well, that's a whole other.
Yeah. It's related to Yoga Alliance, though.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I don't think the vitriol with which Yoga Alliance as let me say it this way. You can speak with vitriol about the organization of Yoga Alliance, like the entity that exists, but like I've only had positive, well, in the modern, in more modern incarnation of Yoga Wars, with the human beings who actually work there, have only had positive interaction. So like I always keep that in mind, that like as much as I'm like, you know what, this is not what I want to advocate for in any way, shape, or form. I also be like, yeah, but you know, this is a group of humans who in some way, shape, or form believe that what they're doing is for the benefit, of the yoga industry. I'd be careful about saying community there. And so they are doing what they want to advocate for, in the context of this organization, which, you know, may be providing a momentum to what they're advocating for that can't exactly be reversed, you know, but they're caught up in the stream of that. And I think we all know how, what it feels like to be caught up in the stream with a particular organization that's just kind of moving in a direction. And maybe it's not doing anything egregious, but certainly there's aspects of it that are not ideal and not feeling like we have the power to turn it in the other direction. And not having the financial stability to feel like that, you know, an infraction or a direction is something that we want to like die on a sword for.
I just want to recapitulate the call to action for Boston area yoga studio owners. Do you want to go beyond Boston a little bit with the call to action?
Anybody who's in the general vicinity that you would consider, you know, part of the Boston area. I feel like sometimes people consider the Boston area smaller, but like I grew up in Cleveland. Like the Cleveland area, metropolitan area is like humongous. So like, there are towns that I've never even been to that are considered part of the Cleveland area. So I use the term Boston area very broadly, let's say.
Yeah, I think that's cool.
And it's not, you know, it's not to say, like, there's a difference between saying, like, we're going to form an opposing organization as opposed to, like, well, what are my standards? What are your standards? What do you feel is valuable? What do I feel is valuable? What are best practices that you observe in the context of training teachers in this culture? And just have like a simple orientation to what we're doing. And maybe there's agreement that can happen there, but maybe there isn't. Maybe it really does need to go back to a little bit of the Wild West.
'Cause it's already there. Let's not.
Yeah. Like it's already
pretending
there.
Like it's not.
It is the wild. Like people can do whatever they want is, you know, they put down their thing in the Yoga Alliance spreadsheet or whatever it is that you enter it into. And then they go do whatever the hell they want.
Like, yeah, but I mean, like your massage school, is somebody popping in the door to make sure they're doing what they say they're doing?
Well, I mean, the person who runs the school is also the chair of the board of licensure. So,
well, that's not an example so, then.
So it's not a great example because he, you know, ethically has to, you know, even if he wasn't in that position, you know, would ethically have to follow it. But, you know. No profession is perfect in the way that their laws and their, you know, licensure and everything is organized, and we're not going to crack the code for some like perfect way to do this by any means, but we can certainly find a better way than this. And because of the, you know, the level of hatred of that organization that's been around for so long, the hatred has been around for so long. Like, I don't think anybody walked out of that initial ad hoc meeting satisfied with what was presented as the 200-hour standard. But it was a starting point. Problem is it just evolved in a really questionable way, or didn't evolve as it needed to, depending on how you want to look at the conversation. So, you know, there has to be a way to do better, but it can't be this like wait for some magical organization to be formed on high and then they put out these standards that we all then agree to and adhere to. No, it has to be there has to be a way to do it from the ground up. And if that results in different multiple organizations and different sets of standards that people voluntarily choose to, you know, go with, even if that, you know, as much as I think this would be awful, even if it went to state regulation, we'd figure it the fuck out. We'd figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
It would be rough. It would fundamentally change the relationship between student and teacher, and certainly student and studio, because there would be a lot of, you know, but we'd figure it out.
Yeah,
I agree. And I are still going to be, you know, in some basement somewhere telling people to inhale, take their arms up, and exhale, forward fold. Like, we're... I'm really not worried about that.
Oh, that makes me happy.
See, I turned it around, Kate.
You did.
I made it something quasi-positive.
So I'm going to call it, because I don't want anything other than that call to action to be left ringing in the ears of especially local listeners and non-local listeners in your own community. Same thing.
Yeah. But not with us. Do it in your own community. And then we'll
go
share.
Small.
Yeah, then we'll share best practices. We'll share. So this has been Unrolled. Again, I will make our call to action between Kate and I to record more frequently.
But thank you for your patience.
Yes,
I mean, this has been
wonderfully
like
patient.
Been a robust year for both of us, and
yes,
I'm just psyched we're still doing it.
Yeah, there was a moment of relief when you popped on the video. I was like, oh, she's still there. Thank God.
No, it's true. Thank God. That one's still around.
Wonderful.
So follow us on Facebook. We don't post anything. Don't worry.
Don't you. Don't you worry. But you know, the one day a year that we post something, you're gonna be really happy.
That's usually pretty good.
Yeah.
And our email. What is our email?
Unrolledpodcast@gmail.com, which is an email that I haven't actually checked in a good long while, so I should probably. Probably look in on that. Yeah, wonderful.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye.
Godspeed. Bye.
We're getting sloppy, Kate.